the third case we have today is De Jesus Nunez, the Attorney General, number 20-2651, Mr. Mosley and Ms. Fitzgerald Sambu. Am I pronouncing that last name correctly? S-A-M-B.
Yes, you got it, Sambu. Thank you.
Just want to make sure I didn't screw it up. All right, Mr. Mosley, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, I'm Thomas Mosley, counsel for the petitioner, Mr. Nunez. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
You sure can.
Now, the court should reverse the non-precedential single member board decision here under this court's decision in Liao.
There's something, hang on, there's something in the background here. Somebody have...
Yeah.
It's basically what we're having is a 7 second lapse or something. We'll start all over again. Patrick, can you come back on?
Yes, I'm here. Does he still have the YouTube running in the background?
Yes, I do. I'm trying to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's we'll start all over again. Once you get that taken care of.
It's almost like he was talking to me again.
A possible suggestion is just for Mr. Mosley to get off and come back on via Zoom after getting rid of his YouTube.
Thomas, are you there? Were you able to shut off your YouTube?
Yes.
Okay. We'll start all over again. And Patrick, you can just get rid of what we did previously. The third case this morning is De Jesus Nunez, the Attorney General, number 20-2651, Mr. Mosley and Ms. Fitzgerald Sambu. Mr. Mosley?
May it please the court, I'm Thomas Mosley, counsel for the petitioner, Mr. Nunez. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, no problem at all.
Okay. The court should reverse the single member non-presidential board decision here under this court's decision in Liao.
Can I just get some facts out of the way. Is Mr. De Jesus Nunez still in ICE custody?
He is, Your Honor. He's currently detained at the Bergen County Jail. He's been there since September of 2019 in custody.
And it's correct. He only pled guilty to count two, the child endangerment charge in the New Jersey State Court. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct, Your Honor. Just that one count under 24C2A1.
And the alleged misconduct under count two was what? Sending a video? Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. While, of course, facts under Cabeda and the categorical approach are not relevant to the inquiry here. He did send a salacious video.
Was there a plea agreement for the New Jersey child endangerment offense?
It was a negotiated plea, Your Honor. Yes, that's correct. I don't believe the plea agreement, however, is part of the record.
I think that was my next question. I couldn't find it in the record. Okay, thank you. Well, then you proceed.
As I say, the case should be terminated. The decision should be reversed under this court's decision in Liao for essentially.
Mr. Mosley, I apologize for cutting you off, but since you brought up Liao, I mean, isn't the Pennsylvania statute that was at issue in Liao different and materially different from the statute that we're looking at here? The Pennsylvania statute refers to knowingly endangers the welfare of a child by violating a duty of care, whereas the New Jersey statute says sexual conduct which would impair or debauch the morals of the child. And it seems to me that there's a difference there. Can you speak to that?
Well, I would say, Judge Noriega, my point, I think, is that the Pennsylvania statute is actually stronger. And as the Pennsylvania statute says, endangers the welfare. But the case law interpreting that statute.
Mr. Mosley, doesn't the Pennsylvania statute says conduct that could threaten a child's welfare?
No, the actual language of the statute, Judge Restrepo, says endangers the welfare. But the
case it says knowingly endangers by violating a duty of care, right?
Right.
So that's, you violate a duty of care, and it has, right? Isn't that what the language is?
Yes, but the language, again, Judge Noriega, the language specifically says endangers the welfare of a child. In other words, you look at the language of the statute, then the case law interpreting that statute talks with respect to harm. And the Pennsylvania case law mentioned in Liao is that the conduct could. Similarly here with respect to the New Jersey statute, the case law interpreting that statute, specifically the Hackett case, New Jersey Supreme Court case, allows the statute to be violated, or rather sets the standard with respect to harm as capacity. As a matter of plain language, capacity, we submit, is not the same thing as a particular likelihood.
You brought up the Hackett case, and the Hackett case does say, note that the statute says would, and that the issue is a likely event. But the Hackett case also discusses the predecessor statute, New Jersey Statute 2A96-3, and noted that that statute had the language tends to debauch the child or impair its morals. And that language was replaced in the current statute that we're talking about to say would. Isn't that a meaningful change?
Your Honor, it's in terms, first of all, would is not will. Would is not reasonable probability. Would, I submit, is not even necessarily likely. But if you look at the Hackett.
But Hackett, in addressing what would means, Hackett said the word would signals the futurity of a likely event.
Yes.
It does not require the event's actual occurrence. But Hackett, in looking at the word would, said it signals a likely event. Isn't that different from just merely has the capacity to, as in Liao?
That particular language is in the context of actual harm not being required. I submit that if you look at Hackett.
But it's the only language that we have from the New Jersey courts as to what would means, right?
But that's, Your Honor, I submit if you look at the very first page of the Hackett decision, it says we hold that based on the testimony offered, a jury could conclude beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant's conduct had the capacity to impair. Similarly, if you look at, and the reference is to page 426 on the West law, Hackett talks in terms of in this case, the burden shifts from the mental state to the potential effect that such conduct may have on the morals of a child. So we are talking about something here that is certainly not will, certainly not a reasonable probability in terms of harm occurring. We are talking.
Hackett also says very clearly the question, and Hackett was looking at actual harm versus likelihood of harm, and said the question is not whether the victims of the alleged endangering actually had their morals impaired. The question is whether the actor's sexual conduct was conduct that likely would impair or debauch the morals of a child in the community. That's what they said the question is.
Right.
And isn't that then the capacity?
From the very beginning of this decision, it talks about capacity and it talks about potential effect. And the subsequent decision, reported decision in Bryant, interpreting that and giving the prosecution's view makes clear that it's only capacity. Similarly, the most recent reported New Jersey Supreme Court McLean, which we cite in our brief, talks in terms of capacity. Now, I understand Your Honor's reading of this, but I think we have a situation in which, at the very least, and I think it's just capacity, but even if it's something in between, we have to draw a line here with respect to what particular likelihood we're talking about, what the definition of particular likelihood. And in that we have at the extreme where it, the in the sorum matter of sorum case, we have something that we have a statute where it's clear reasonable probability of harm. In Fregoso, we have from the Ninth Circuit, we have may. I would submit that at the very least, when a New Jersey, when a statute, when you might say, though I disagree, that the interpretation of the statute is ambiguous, that it, that for the severe penalty of deportation to be visited upon somebody, we have to draw the line. We should draw the line and require conviction under the state statute to unambiguously, which I submit it does not here do, unambiguously require a particular likelihood of harm. And if you read the New Jersey case law, if you read the, even if you read Hackett as ambiguous on that point, which I don't think you should, if you read Hackett as ambiguous on that point, we haven't crossed the line to show a particular likelihood. But that's what particular likelihood, I submit, is just one element of this. The other element is there has to be a particular likelihood of harm. And the New Jersey, the portion of the New Jersey statute under which my client was convicted separates harm out. In other words, you take a look at 2C24-4A1. It talks in terms of any other person who engages in conduct or who causes harm as described in this paragraph. Well, he was convicted only under the conduct provision of that statute, not causes harm. In other words, New Jersey separates out harm from the provision of the endangering statute under which he was convicted. So even if I lose on particular likelihood, which I do not think that I should, but even if I lose under particular likelihood of harm, I would nevertheless submit that I should win on the fact that the New Jersey statute under which he was convicted does not require harm. It's segregated out. And again,
what does the New Jersey statute require then, Mr. Mosley?
Well, it distinguishes between impairing or debauching the morals of a child,
right?
Impairing or debauching, but then it talks, and a child, by the way, could be someone 17 years and 11 months old, and it.
So is it your position that is not harm?
Well, my position is that the New Jersey statute distinguishes these two categories, and the portion, Judge Restrepo, under which my client was convicted was not the harm provision. And that's the distinction here. Liao says you have to have a particular likelihood of harm. Even if I've lost on particular likelihood, which I don't think I have or should, nevertheless, we have harm that is required. But if I can get.
But you don't need actual harm. You need a particular likelihood of harm, right?
Right, and the statute, we're not talking, absolutely, Judge Mayakov, we're not talking even a particular likelihood of harm here, because harm isn't part of the provision of the statute under which he was convicted. As you, any other person who engages in conduct, we're talking about sexual conduct, or who causes harm as described in this paragraph, is paragraph
right. A. Who engages in that conduct, and that conduct is conduct that would impair or debauch the morals of a child.
Right, but the New Jersey
gets back to the same conduct that we're talking about. It's the conduct, his conduct is conduct that would or has the probable likelihood of causing impairing or debauching the morals of a child.
And that is harm, right, Mr. Mosley? That is harm.
Not according to the New Jersey defines the statute. I mean, this statute, for example, take the facts of Hackett. can be violated by someone standing naked in front of his window. An 18-year-old boy who stands naked in front of his window, whereas a girl who is 17 and 11 months passes, violates the statute. So the New Jersey statute.
I'm sorry, you don't think that standing in your window naked causes harm?
What I'm saying, Judge Noriega, is that New Jersey makes a distinction here, and New Jersey makes a distinction between debauching the morals and harm, and that's not the provision under which he was convicted. But if I can, just getting back to particular likelihood, we do not have here a situation in which there's a requirement that you prove a reasonable probability of harm. That's a matter of sorum. We have something that I would submit is at most ambiguous into what you must prove. I mean, Bryant and McLean all say capacity, and capacity's simply not as a matter of plain English.
Let's just be clear. I mean, McLean was talking about a different statute. There was no analysis of the statute we're talking about. What McLean has is a cite to Hackett with a parenthetical, right?
It has a discussion of Hackett, but it is nevertheless, even if it's considered dicta,
it's a citation to Hackett with a parenthetical, right?
It's a citation to Hackett with a parenthetical, but it is dicta from the New Jersey Supreme Court.
In terms of looking at a different statute was McLean. And then Bryan wasn't focused on whether a defendant actually needs to know that his conduct would impair or debauch the morals. And that case was not really on the meaning of the statute. It was more focused on the knowledge of the defendant in the case, right?
But it summarized the requirements for conviction under, again, a precedential decision, the requirements for conviction, and it limited it to capacity.
And Bryant was not a New Jersey Supreme Court case.
No,
right?
It was an appellate division decision, which certainly has precedential value. If you look though at Hackett, Hackett repeatedly says capacity. Even if I were to concede that Hackett may be considered ambiguous on this point, we do not have a clear line. We do not have a clear line where you have anything approaching that has to be a reasonable probability, which is where the Board of Immigration Appeals has found that a statute meets the test of a particular likelihood of harm under the circumstances.
Right, why don't we hear from the opposing counsel and we'll get you back on rebuttal. Thank you. Ms. Fitzgerald-Sambu?
Sure. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Elizabeth Fitzgerald-Sambu on behalf of Respondent Attorney General.
Can you help me in connection with the statute here? He was convicted under A1, is that correct?
Yes, correct, Your Honor.
And that says who engages in sexual conduct which would impair or debauch the morals of a child. A2, which he wasn't convicted under, says any person having a legal duty for care of a child who has assumed or who has assumed responsibility who causes the child harm. Is there some difference between the harm is there harm under A1? A2 specifically says harm. A1 says would impair or debauch the morals of a child. Is there a difference between those two?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe so. But the difference is, are you reading, could you say the cause harm part that you're looking at A2?
I'm just looking at A1 and A2. A2 specifically says harm. Is that different than A1, or should we just understand that impairing or debauching the morals of a child is, without saying it, harm?
Right. I believe that this court should assume that impairing or debauching the morals of the child is harm. And I think the Hackett case explains all of this well. So the reason why...
I have a problem with the Hackett case. I'll be honest. Okay. I have no idea what they're talking about at times. They said it's holding. At least I was told in law school, the holding is the thing that is the decision that comes out, that's the law that sets the precedent for that particular court. We hold that based on the testimony offered, a jury could conclude beyond a reasonable doubt that Hackett's conduct had the capacity to impair or debauch. And then a few pages later, talks about potential effect that it may have on the morals of the child. And then it goes into, on page 428, two pages after the last comment, we do not view the alleged altered statutory language which would impair or debauch the morals of a child as heightening the proof required of the element. Proof of the actual impairing or debauching is not required. And then it goes, the word would signals the futurity of a likely event, which that's not even Wittgensteinian. I have no idea what that means. I mean, it sounds like maybe reasonable likelihood. So can you tell me what Hackett, it's internally inconsistent. And I have a holding, I have something else that looks like it might be a dictum, but am I wrong?
We don't view those phrases or those parts of the decision as inconsistent. I think when Hackett is understood in context, what they're holding is saying is that for the statute, petitioner's statute of conviction, the harm or the impairing or debauching the morals harm relates to an average child in the community. So that the Supreme Court of New Jersey makes very clear in the Hackett decision. And that's part of the holding, is that the harming of the morals is not related to the actual victim at issue. That's not the inquiry to convict. The inquiry is related to an average child in that community. So that's why the court sort of explains in passing and uses the phrase tends to or has the capacity to, because it's referencing that average child in the community and not whether there actually was that harming of the morals of the actual victim in the specific case. So I think that's why the New Jersey courts have used that language in general. And another part of Hackett is that they were explaining the difference between the prior version of the statute, which used the phrase tends to, then the legislature changed it to would. And so here we have what we view as a holding saying that those two are the change in statutory language, although it appears significant, both of those phrases signal a likely event. So here you have the language saying the futurity of a likely event. That's meaning in reference to the average child in the community. Therefore, the statute requires a likelihood that an average child in the community would have their morals harmed. So that's how we view the Hackett case. We believe that's all incorporated into the holding. And when properly understood in context, that's what they were saying.
If you're writing opinion, at least as I understand the craft, when you say we hold, what follows is you're holding. And then five pages later, it looks like it could be they're trying to, in effect, give the analogy to what is an interpretation, legislative history, if you will, even though this is an opinion, as to how they would go about looking at what the word would means. And I just get lost in this.
Well, opinion. Your Honor, this court should assume that the Supreme Court was bound by the New Jersey legislature's language. So here, the Supreme Court of New Jersey was bound to interpret the term would, because that's the term that's used in the statute. So to sort of take petitioner's interpretation, he's arguing that, in this Hackett decision, the Supreme Court of New Jersey was saying that would actually means sort of this capacity to something that's less. But here, that's not what they did. They said that would means the same thing as the prior tends to language. And then because it relates to the average child in the community, that's why the court sort of as shorthand says has a capacity to or tends to, because there was confusion, particularly in this case, about whether the harm to the morals has to relate to the actual victim or to the average child in the community. So the holding of Hackett is focused on saying that the harm has to be to the average child in the community. So that's why it sort of uses that other language capacity to clarify that, even though the statute says would, which implies that the morals of the actual victim had to be harmed.
Wouldn't it be more in your favor if the holding said the following? We hold that based on the testimony offered, a jury would conclude beyond a reasonable doubt that Hackett's conduct impaired or debauched the morals of a minor.
Well, that would match the statutory text, but I think the reason why the court used the language it did is because the whole entire holding was clarifying that it's not the actual victim. So, although I guess that would have been an easier plug for us to pull out in cite, when Hackett is properly understood in context, it's very clear that the reason why they use that capacity to language is because of the holding that the focus is on an average child in the community and not the actual victim, which if the court just uses would, it's ambiguous slightly.
Right, and in Hackett, they are saying you don't have to show that the actual child who was the victim was harmed, right?
Correct.
That's what you don't have to show actual harm of this particular victim. You have to show that the conduct at issue here would likely impair or debauch the morals of the average child in the community, right?
Correct, Your Honor. And that was actually the litigation in Hackett. So that's why the court was clarifying that issue of what exactly would means, because there was confusion about that issue. So that's, I think, why we have the court using that general capacity to or tends to language just to sort of clarify that point, which then later courts like Bryant pulled out in cite or McLean. But even in the Bryant case, which is a lower court New Jersey case, there they also cite the likely language. So in that Bryant decision, they say that, you know, the term would means it refers to a likely event. So here petitioner is trying to say that that Bryant shows that somehow the harm is not likely, but the Bryant actually used the phrase likely that it pulled from the Hackett decision.
Now we run into the comparison between the New Jersey statute and what federal law requires under the categorical approach. In other words, there has to be a match.
Correct,
and
Your Honor.
In Liao, we clarified that to qualify as a crime of child abuse under the INA, state child endangerment offense must require that the actor's conduct create a particular likelihood of harm to the child that rises above conduct that creates only the bare potential for non-serious harm. And my problem is when I look at that holding in Hackett, it talks about, in effect, the potential for non-serious harm. And Liao requires something more than that. That's why I'm having a problem with the categorical approach, which we have to apply here.
Well, Your Honor, I think the issue then is, you know, whether impairing or debauching the morals of a child or a likelihood of that is actually harm. And so then this goes back to whether the statute of conviction categorically matches the board's definition of the phrase in the INA, child abuse, child neglect, or child abandonment. So this court has already deferred to the board's definition. And in that definition, even in matter of Mendoza-Osorio, the board also uses the bare potential language, I believe. And there they explicitly include the types of conduct that are at issue here.
How do you distinguish Liao for me in the context of this case?
Right, so Liao involved the likelihood of harm for a Pennsylvania statute. And there the Pennsylvania statute used the terms could threaten the child's welfare. And even the board has held in matter of Mendoza-Osorio that some child endangerment statutes like the one in the Pennsylvania case in Liao don't meet the board's definition of child abuse, child neglect, or child abandonment because the likelihood of harm is to, there isn't a likelihood of harm. So there, the Pennsylvania statute used the term welfare. It explicitly said could threaten, but here you have the term would in the New Jersey statute, and you have New Jersey precedent from their highest court of the Supreme Court holding that that requires a likelihood of injury to the average child's morals. So there, that's why in our view, there is a categorical match as far as the likelihood of harm. And
the state statute, if I just go by the holding in Hackett, covers mm-hmm. conduct that could have the capacity to, in effect, debauch the morals of a child, and I'll assume for the moment that that's harm. In Liao, we say that the federal statute requires a particular likelihood of harm, and that a state statute which covers conduct that could threaten a child is not a categorical fit. And what I'm saying is, that's my problem. How do I get over that?
Right. Well, I think a major part of it is that in Liao, it also involved welfare. So it didn't, in the New Jersey statute, the harm is specified. It impairs or debauches the morals of a child. In Liao, the Pennsylvania statute just said, use the term welfare, which, you know, that's well, sort of
the New Jersey statute, as I understand it, 2C24-4 is entitled Endangering the Welfare of Children.
Right. But each state has different statutory crimes as far as what child endangerment actually includes. And that's why in matter of Mendoza-Osorio, the board stated that sometimes some states will have child endangerment statutes that cover conduct that meets the child abuse, neglect, or abandonment definition, and others that don't. So in Pennsylvania, it's very ambiguous. It captures a lot of conduct where prosecutors could sort of argue that anything is encompassed within the welfare issue. But here, it's tied to the New Jersey statute says impairing or debauching a child's morals. And then you have the board defining the phrase child abuse, child abandonment, or child, neglect or abandonment as including harming a child's morals. It includes both sexual conduct and harming morals. So that's why it categorically matches the board's definition of that statutory phrase. Whereas in Liao, child's welfare would have had to fit within the board's definition of child abuse, child neglect, or child abandonment. And in that case, welfare was so open-ended that it didn't match the board's definition.
So going back to the New Jersey interpretation of this statute, if you do you with if you didn't have in Hackett, or if you were without the language in Hackett describing the word would on page 428 or whatever it is for, as meaning the futurity of a likely event, whatever that means, and all you're left with is the holding on page 423, wouldn't you lose then? Wouldn't this fit right under Liao?
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor, because you still have the term would, whereas in Liao, you have the statutory phrase may threaten.
I get it. And if the easy way out for the court, and if you were drafting this for the court, it was just say would means would, cut it out. But they have a holding that would, in effect, we hold that based on the testimony that could conclude something had the capacity of impairing or debauching the morals of a child. And that falls into a trap and makes this case very much like Liao. And the trouble in Hackett is you then have language after the holding that appears to take a different tack. I'm saying if you don't have that extra language, doesn't this case fit right within Liao, unfortunately, and become not a fit under the categorical approach?
Well, Your Honor, we disagree. And I think the reason why is
because... But you got to give me a reason why you disagree.
Yeah, I am. the reason why I think the key is because in the New Jersey statute, it relates to an average child in the community. So there, they're saying it would harm that average child. So the prosecutor has to actually prove that the average child would actually be harmed. It's just that because it's an average child, it's all sort of theoretical versus proving that like the actual victim in this case would be harmed. So would is still a definitive term. That's essentially what the Hackett case held, is that, you know, would still means would, but it just relates to this sort of theoretical average child. So that's, I think, the key distinction here. Whereas in Liao, there wasn't sort of that hook. It was just could threaten, and then the term welfare. It was much more open-ended than here, the New Jersey statute saying there is going to be harm. It's just that you analyze the average child.
All right. Any questions, my colleagues?
Yeah, briefly. Does it matter that the statute specifically references sexual conduct? Do we bake that into the equation or not?
Well, Your Honor, so that's the conduct that has to be shown, and then the impact is sort of the impairing or debauching the morals. But here, it doesn't really make a difference because the board's definition of child abuse, neglect, or abandonment encompasses both sexual conduct and harming the morals of a child. So, you know, both aspects of the New Jersey statute fall into or categorically match the board's definition of child abuse, neglect, and abandonment. So to us, that's sort of a non-issue. The harm definitely is included within the board's definition, and this court has already deferred to that. So it doesn't matter that this here was an unpublished single member decision, as petitioner argues.
Thank you.
Is the fact that the New Jersey statute mentions sexual conduct specifically relevant to us in trying to distinguish the statute that was at issue in Liao?
I don't think so, Your Honor. Liao was a child endangerment crime. I guess here, so petitioner is arguing that for the third degree, that because the statute uses the phrase or, the conduct or causes harm, that there's sort of these two types of conduct. But I mean, that's not necessarily how the New Jersey court has interpreted this statute. And either way, both the conduct and the child endangerment impairing morals aspect of it meet the board's definition. So I think Lau was more focused on sort of this classic likelihood of harm child endangerment context, where the sexual conduct, if anything, is stronger than, you know, sort of the impairing morals and generic type of child endangerment crime. If that makes sense.
All righty. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Any further questions?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll hear back from Mr. Mosley on rebuttal.
Just very briefly on rebuttal. Capacity in respect to the government's argument about the theoretical or the hypothetical child, capacity in terms of achieving the goal of the statute makes much more sense because it lessens the prosecution's burden in that regard and focuses more generically upon what could happen. So I would submit that capacity, which is introduced as the holding of the, as the holding of the case, is really what the court was focusing upon under these circumstances, and that should be dispositive here. Finally, getting back, if Hackett is viewed as inconsistent, I think in drawing the line, and this is the line the court should draw, is that the interpretation of the statute has to unequivocally require a particular likelihood, which I do not think even reading Hackett, which I would submit even reading Hackett as ambiguous, does that. So under these circumstances, I would submit the case is governed by Liao and it should be, the finding of removability should be reversed.
Thank you very much. Any questions from my colleague?
None.
No, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel for very well presented arguments and also well done briefs. I would ask that a transcript be prepared of this oral argument and split the cost, if you would, please. Again, thank you for being with us. It's a pleasure having both of you.
Thank you.